Welcome to episode 36 of Near Death Dolls. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Paige.
And we're your hosties with the mosties.
While talking about ghosties.
And other unsolved shit.
Unsolved mysteries? Oh my god.
I'm sure this has been on Unsolved Mysteries.
Ooh, I hope it has. But anyway, thank you for joining us today. Lisa will be taking us through the unsolved murder of bum bum bum, JonBenet Ramsey.
Ooh. It's gonna be a bitch. But first, let's partake of alcoholic beverages because we're definitely gonna need it to get through this one. So, Paige, what's helping you get through this case today?
Tequila, as usual.
Did you know, actually, tequila has really good health benefits? It helps with digestion.
I didn't know that, Lisa.
I mean, that's what I read, and that's what I like to believe.
I'm going to believe it, too. I think tequila is one of the healthier of the hard alcohols, right?
If I remember correctly, I think it does, it's better for people with blood sugar issues, if I'm not mistaken. I may totally be mistaken.
Agave instead of sugar.
I think it's just easier to process. Back to maybe TMI, right after I got back from my honeymoon, and I'm a foodie, number one. I'm a big foodie, and we ate so good on our honeymoon. A couple months after, I started getting dizzy spells and feeling nauseous. Go to the doctor, and they're like, yeah, you're pre-diabetic. You're going to need to lose some weight. And I'm like, oh, I like to eat. Man. So when we were researching, like, what kind of alcohol can I have, and, like, what can I have that's going to be okay for me? And my husband's like, this article says, like, tequila is one of the better alcohols if you're going to have alcohol. So.
Oh, okay, girl. I didn't know that. And I love tequila. So thank you so much for telling me.
So are you just doing body shots off of Sam? Like,
totally. Yeah.
I was going to go into, like, detail, but I don't think I can.
You don't need to. I'm going to do body shots off Sam. No, I'm just kidding. He's not here. I'm by myself.
Sam, put some tequila in your belly button. Grab a lime, baby.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It'll have lint in it. I don't need that.
How do guys' belly buttons have so much lint?
I don't know. My belly button never has lint in it. I don't understand.
I have a deep cavernous innie, and I never have anything in my belly button.
I know. I don't understand. I don't get it. But no, I'm actually having a margarita mix, and it's delicious. So
perfect. I'm happy for you.
Thank you. Thank you. What about you, Lisa? Are you doing body shots?
Most definitely not. Because if it were my husband, there would be lint in his belly button.
Oh, okay. So we've got the same problem.
We would. It's my favorite thing is to go check his belly button for lint. It must be one of those, like, I don't know if I 100% believe in evolution, but I do feel like the monkey wanting to go, like, get the bugs off and search for the lint in his belly. Okay, wow. I just realized I'm almost done with my drink, which I am drinking a Woodbridge Reserve Cabernet Sauvignon. I really shouldn't have drank this much before my own episode. It's a red wine. I'm drinking red wine. Make me feel so fine. Guys, I'm so sorry. Paige and I need to giggle before this one because, damn, it's going to be fucked up.
There's going to be no giggling from here on out.
I don't know about that. but we let me just say, we know this is a serious topic, as are all of our topics. And, but sometimes it's a nervous laugh.
That's true. I have really bad nervous laugh. So if we start laughing on this episode, guys, it's not because we think it's funny. It's almost like, ha ha, everything sucks kind of thing.
Definitely everything sucks about this. So are you ready to get into it?
Tequila says yes.
This is like the magic eight ball.
Ask again later.
Ask again later. Perfect. All right. Let me give you a little intro here. Ready?
Yes.
The murder of JonBenet Ramsey is one of the most remembered and debated upon cases of our time. This beautiful little darling, pageant princess to wealthy and respected parents, is murdered in her own home on the day after Christmas. Do you remember this happening, Paige?
Yes, I remember it. I remember it being plastered on every magazine cover and newspaper article, everything. It was everywhere.
Oh, you and I would have been around 9 years old.
Right. Yeah. So we were a little bit older than her, but not too much.
So we would have remembered this. Yeah. I remember seeing on TV and on the cover of magazines at the grocery store, like you said, this pretty little girl, not much younger than me. I think she's closer to my sister's age. And I was hearing she'd been killed, and it's kind of hard for a 9 year old to process this. And we're going to talk about that later, because actually JonBenet's older brother was about our age. I think he was born the same year as us. So.
Oh, really? Okay.
So today we're going to discuss the facts and timeline, and next week we're going to discuss suspects and theories and evidence. Just so you guys know where we're going with this today.
Part one, part two.
So, JonBenet Patricia Ramsey was born August 6, 1990 to John and Patsy Ramsey in Atlanta, Georgia. Her name was a play on her father's name, which was John Bennett, and her middle name was for her mother, Patsy, whose actual name is Patricia, but she goes by Patsy.
So it's like a junior situation, but not really.
John and Patsy also had JonBenet's older brother, Burke, who was born in 1987. So this is me and my younger sister's like same years born. So
1987.
Mm-hmm. We're 1987 babies. So Patsy was John's second wife, and he had three kids with his first wife. His kids were Elizabeth, John Andrew, and Melinda. And actually, his daughter Elizabeth, who I think went by Beth, had passed away from a car accident in 1992. So John has already had experience with the loss of a child. But JonBenet was their little darling. She was, by so many people's account, a sweet, outgoing, and bright little girl, and a little bit of like a little prankster jokester too.
Like Lisa.
Yes. A lot of people used to think when I was little, like I was kind of a shy kid, but every once in a while I'd pull a prank and people would be like, "Little Lisa? Really?
That little sweetheart."
Yeah, I got that a lot. So, JonBenet really loved doing like arts and crafts. Sometimes she'd join Patsy, like working on paintings. Patsy did a little bit of like, I think, oil painting. And Patsy doted on her daughter. She was definitely like her mini-me.
And this was Patsy's first child, right?
Her second. She had Burke, the older brother.
Oh, Burke is older. Okay, sorry about that.
No. Burke is the older brother, and then JonBenet.
It makes sense. She'd be like, "Oh, my daughter, my one daughter."
It is her only daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that with moms and daughters. It's like, "This is my little girl."
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So a little more background about John and Patsy. John was originally from Nebraska, but went to school in Michigan. He attended Michigan State University and received his bachelor's in electrical engineering and a master's in business administration.
Okay, so he's smart.
It's subjective.
True.
He also went into the Navy, working as a civil engineer stationed in the Philippines for a few years, and then he went to Atlanta, Georgia, where he met Patsy.
Okay, Southerners.
Patsy was born and raised in West Virginia.
The Virginias!
Yes, didn't we just talk about the Virginias not that long ago?
Oh, yes, we did.
Yes, we did. She attended West Virginia University and received her BA in journalism.
Okay, wow. So they've both gotten, at least they've gotten into college.
Yeah, well, they both graduated with a minimum, or she got a bachelor's, he got bachelor's in electrical engineering and a master's in business. So, I mean, they're fairly smart people.
Yeah.
And Patsy, she was actually very into the beauty pageant circuit. And she actually won Miss West Virginia in 1977.
Holy shnikes, that's nothing to sneeze at.
Mm-mm. After graduating college, she moved to Atlanta, Georgia, where she met John Ramsey. They were married in 1980 and had their first child together, Burke, in 1987. So they were married about 7 years before they had their first kid.
Okay, so they planned it. Or, you know, maybe.
I would say, I'm not 100% sure. I never read anything that said they were planning or not planning, but at least they had time together before they were parents, which right, I always think right. is very important.
Totally.
Not saying anything against people who, you know, start a family immediately, but I know for me personally, like, I've very much enjoyed these years of, mm-hmm. you know, marriage with no kids. Not sure if kids are coming or not anytime soon, but we'll see. Anyways, in 1989, John started a company called Advanced Product Group. Okay, let me just stop here. I hate when companies have very ambiguous names. Like, you have no idea what they actually do.
Oh, my God.
It drives me nuts.
Yes. Oh, and their fucking commercials. There's all those dumb commercials that's just a bunch of buzzwords and stock images of fields and oceans and stuff. And it's like, yeah, what do you do, though?
Exactly, do you do? It was some kind of computer company. So he merged his company with two other firms to become Access Graphics. And he actually became the president and CEO of this merged company. And it was worth billions. Billions, baby.
Billions. Holy shit. Good job, John.
And with this success, the Ramseys were reportedly pretty well off with three houses, some cars, boats, even a private plane.
A private plane? Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah. So while John ran his company, Patsy was a homemaker and worked with several charities in addition to mothering her children. And by all accounts, they were a picture-perfect family.
By all accounts, what goes on behind those doors?
You could work for IDTV.
I could. I fucking could.
You really could. I like that. I like that a lot.
No, we don't need them. We've got near-death dolls.
We do. We do. I don't know. Maybe I could write the like this silly, campy like voiceovers for like IDTV shows. Southern Fried Homicide.
Southern Fried Homicide?
That's a show.
It's a real show.
It's a real show called Southern Fried Homicide, and I guess it's all about Southern things. It's cute, right?
That is a cute name.
But no family is ever perfect. Paige and I were just talking about this in my own personal family drama.
Family drama is everywhere. It's true. Nobody's perfect.
Nobody's perfect. Where the children were concerned, they both seemed to have something kind of going on behind the scenes. For Burke, some said he had jealous behaviors, which I'm like, that is all siblings.
That's everybody, yes.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. There's one account of Burke acting out in anger at his sister and hitting her in the head with a golf club.
That's a little harsh. That's kind of intense for sibling behavior, even if they're jealous.
I don't know what the whole situation is. All I know is, like, kids don't understand sometimes what they're doing. Like, one time I definitely hit my sister upside the head with a remote control, and it did leave a big fucking bruise, and I got in so much trouble.
I bet you did.
Sure did. So
I assume he did too, right? I mean,
oh yeah, I'm okay. Sure he did. I'm sure he did. I did read one account that said it left a little scar on her. I'm not 100% sure where. I think it was either on her forehead or on her cheek, but I could not find like a 100% this is what happened. So also, let me go ahead and say now, I worked very, very hard to try and find only reliable sources. If I say something that maybe you haven't heard, I'm sorry. I'm doing my very, very best. I try not to go on like just Reddit and read theories. I try to really find credible sources like police reports, autopsy reports, interviews.
Yeah, things that you can back up.
Yeah,
yeah.
Dude, I read through so many transcripts of interviews. That's what I spent most of my time doing. So, police interviews, not just regular whatever interviews.
Yeah, so Lisa's fucking legit for this episode.
I'm trying my hardest, I promise. So if you hear anything that's different from what you've heard,
email us. We'll tell you where we found it.
Yes, I did. I was very, very good about saving all of the web addresses of everything that I found.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Let me know if you have any issue. We can talk about it. Also, regarding Burke, it said that at times he had scatological issues, in this instance smearing fecal matter on objects, and this is called scatalia. Maybe
scatalia. Oh my God, that's crazy, because when you first said he had scatology issues, I was like, do you mean poop? Yes, you yes. did. You mean
scatological
poop.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Wow. And I actually read a couple articles. Man, my search history is so fucked. But anyways, I was very careful about putting scatological issues regarding children, not just scat. I knew what that would bring up, okay? Anyways, I'm not 100% sure about this, but this was according to one of their former housekeepers, and this is where I got the information. Burke allegedly, I'm saying allegedly, had gotten into a habit of smearing feces on the walls, on beddings, and other places.
Oh, sorry. That's disgusting.
And I read an article on the subject, and it said there's several reasons why a child would do this. And the one that seems to best fit is his need for attention.
Yeah, that makes sense, huh? He has a little sister now. He's not the center of attention anymore.
Yeah exactly. And there's other reasons. But this behavior can be brought on by trauma or stress. And I'm not sure if that was necessarily applicable before JonBenet's death. I'm not sure what was going on other than maybe just regular jealousy. But if Burke felt extremely jealous of the attention JonBenet seemed to get, it could cause the stress and trigger this behavior.
Poor kid. I don't know what's going on with him, but it has to be pretty awful if he's like, I'm going to touch poop.
There's a very, like, I know, like, Freudian theory is not very well received anymore, but there were, like, the psychosexual stages of development, I believe. And one of them does have to do with excrement and releasing your fecal matter. Like, it caused, like, Freud said it caused a certain type of pleasure, almost like what we would have now through sex. The same kind of pleasure might be had through a child. Now, I'm just totally paraphrasing off of my, like, 12th grade psychology class. I don't know 100%.
Right, that is Freud. Everybody understands.
Yeah.
Freud.
There's Freud and there's
Jung.
Figured
some stuff out. But yeah, we've got Jung and we've got Freud. That's what Freud said. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So not 100%, but it could just be something. Like, I don't know. Sorry, guys.
No, that's okay. I'm just curious about it because we've actually been having a problem at work where people have been smearing their scat on the walls. So
what the fuck kind of place do you work at?
Damn, oh, you know, Target. I mean, retail, exactly. Who knows who's coming in there and using up the bathrooms, but they are not treating them very well.
No. So, as for JonBenet, she had been having bedwetting occurrences leading up to the murder.
Oh, okay. So, she's upset. She's stressed. Maybe.
Maybe. Now, here's what I found. According to WebMD, 85% of kids from 5 to 6 years old can sleep through the night without wetting the bed. That's a big chunk. Now, of course, there are extenuating circumstances, but there are several reasons for it. There could be underdeveloped bladder control, medical issues like UTIs or type 1 diabetes, or trauma and stress. Now, there's all kinds of things, and I think they were saying that JonBenet wet the bed maybe once or twice a week.
Oh, okay, so kind of frequently.
A little more frequently, and I know there are certain, I mean, there's a million reasons, but these were the main reasons. She could have literally just had an underdeveloped bladder. She could have been drinking too close to bedtime, and maybe her parents weren't paying that close of attention. She could have had UTIs. Like, sometimes kids get UTIs. It happens.
Yeah, it could happen. If she's not wiping right, who knows?
There's tons of reasons. I'm not sure about the diabetes. I feel like I don't know at what point you typically find out if a child is diabetic, especially with type 1. I'm not familiar. But then there's also trauma and stress. But we'll get into that.
Okay. And she's a working girl, right? Like, she's out there doing commercials, beauty pageants, stuff like that?
No commercials, but...
No commercials. Okay, no sorry. Commercials. Never mind.
So, it's okay. I was literally, next sentence, about to get into it. So, Patsy, being the beauty queen she was, wanted to put JonBenet in the world of pageantry. And JonBenet actually won the following pageants. She won Little Miss Colorado, Little Miss, I think it's Charlevoix, Charlevoix, maybe? I'm sorry. I think that's a Michigan name. I think it's Charlevoix. Colorado State All-Star Kids Cover Girl. America's Royale Miss and National Tiny Miss Beauty.
Dang. She's racking in the wins.
Yeah, apparently. And she's a gorgeous little girl. Like, she's very, very cute.
Oh my God, yes. Very cute.
And I think with these beauty pageants, I don't think she had been doing it for very long. The more I read deep into it, I think a lot of people were like, oh my God, her mom totally pushed her into this, and she did all these pageants. I think in her life, she did 10 pageants. And okay, that is a lot. Like, if you're doing a couple a year, I guess that could be a lot and be time consuming. I don't know how much time they devoted to putting into practicing for pageants, but...
It doesn't sound like a lot. I mean, I just figured, just knowing the name JonBenet Ramsey, I just assumed she was in a lot more pageants than 10 a year.
Not 10 a year, 10 over her lifespan.
Even more. I didn't even realize she was only in 10 actual pageants. Like you said, it might have been very time consuming to be in those 10 pageants, and that could have taken up a lot of her time. But still, that doesn't sound like too many anyway. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know either. I've never done it. So, and honestly, like, I've never watched, like, Toddlers and Tiaras because it seems very objectifying.
Yeah, I don't want to watch that either. It seems weird.
I don't like reality TV anyway, so I'm not like a Bachelor, Bachelorette watching Survivor person. Toddlers and Tiaras, no. Just, I think it's silly. But that's just me. If you watch it, good for you. I love you. Thank you for listening. We love you very much.
You do what you need to do. You watch what you need to
Everyone
watch.
Everyone likes something different. It's totally for sure. Fine. I'm just saying I don't care for it. Anyways, I feel like there's a difference, though, between putting your little girl in a pageant looking cute and having them dolled up to the point where they look nearly obscene.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Like, you're putting the huge fake eyelashes on every single time, teasing up their hair. Yeah, there is a difference.
Absolutely. And I remember reading somewhere, and I'm sorry, I probably didn't save the link to this one, but I did remember someone saying they saw JonBenet at some point, and she had, like, very, very brightly dyed blonde hair. Oh. And where her hair was a little bit more, not, I wouldn't say dirty blonde, but not as blonde as it was looking. And the woman said to Patsy, like, are you dyeing her hair? Like, and she's like, no, right. That's just from the summer sun. Like, it's just gotten very blonde in the sun. And the friend's like, yeah, no. That's obviously a dye job.
So they're bleaching her hair now.
Possibly. And, like, that's very tough on. If you're a girl, you know this. And some guys. bleaching your hair is very tough on your hair. Oh, and then God, think about putting that on the fine, like, I think it's called, like, virgin hair of, a child.
Yeah. Yeah, you're really not supposed to do that. Even as an adult, they're like, don't do it all the time.
Yeah. Your hair will fall out and break and all kinds of stuff. So
it's on your scalp, too. It starts to burn and tingle. Itches, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, absolutely. Totally. But there were plenty of pictures I saw of JonBenet looking cute and age appropriate. So I think we're so used to just seeing her pageant pictures where she's very, very, like, dolled up to an extreme. Mm-hmm. But the more I researched and the more pictures I saw, there were plenty of instances where she just looked like a cute little girl, where she wasn't in, like, short dresses or swimsuits or, you know, wearing mascara and lipstick. Like, some really nice pictures of her. I'm like, it's good to know she was a little girl in some form. You know what I mean? Is that weird?
Oh, my God. I'm so glad that you said that. I'm glad that she was able to be a little girl once in a while, you know, in between pageants.
Right. No, she was very cute. And, like, every time I saw a picture of her just as a normal kid, I'm like, that's good. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. And if, especially because you said it seemed like she kind of wanted to do it too, right?
You know what?
Like, she was kind of into it, maybe.
Anything that you could possibly find would only be from an adult's perspective.
Oh, so it's hard to say.
I've never seen anything where I could definitively say from JonBenet's mouth, yeah, I enjoyed this.
Okay, so maybe she was just doing it for her mom. Maybe she liked it a little bit, but she did have some time off in between.
I think so, yeah. Okay, so of course, these pageants weren't really meant for anything but a fun competition, but it does make you kind of wonder, aside from, like, parents and family, who's coming to these pageants that shouldn't be there?
Right. There could be some weird dudes sitting in the back, you know, like, just watching.
Yes, there could be. Yeah, so, I mean, it could be men, it could be women. You never know. You just gotta watch your kids and watch who they're around, but let's move on to the holidays.
The holidays? Like, right now?
Kind of like right now. So, with the holidays approaching in 1996, Patsy sends out a family newsletter to people on her Christmas card mailing list. And I'm going to read the letter, and I think it's a good little overview of what had been going on and what Patsy was cool sharing with her family.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear what she wrote down on here.
So this is before, I think, Christmas cards. I know a lot of people, I know I do it, where, like, my husband and I will take a couple pictures and we'll design, like, a Christmas card that goes out with our pictures, and you can write your whole, like, life story on the back or what's been going on that year or whatever.
Yeah.
So a lot of people used to do family newsletters.
Oh, yes. I remember those.
Mm-hmm. So here's what the one that Patsy sent out said. Dear friends and family, it's been another busy year at the Ramsey household. Can't believe it's almost over and time to start again. Melinda, 24, graduated from Medical College of Georgia and is working in pediatric ICU at Kennestone Hospital in Atlanta. John Andrew, who's 20, is a sophomore at the University of Colorado. So those are his John's kids from his previous marriage. So there's a little bit of what's going on with them.
That's nice of her to put that in there. She didn't have to.
No, she didn't. Burke is a busy fourth grader where he really shines in math and spelling. He played flag football this year and is currently on a basketball binge. His little league team was number one. He's lost just about all of his baby teeth, so I'm sure we'll be seeing the orthodontist in 1997.
Ha! That sucks financially.
Don't worry. They're well off. They're very well off. That's true. Remember, they got like 3 houses and an airplane. They're fine.
Yeah. John over there with his fucking CEO status.
It sounds like he earned it. It's okay.
Yeah.
we can throw shade. Okay. So JonBenet is enjoying her first year in, quote, real school. Kindergarten in the core knowledge program is very fast paced and 5 full days a week. She has already been moved ahead to first grade math. She continues to enjoy participating in talent and modeling pageants. She was named America's Royale Tiny Miss last summer and is Colorado's Little Miss Christmas. Her teacher says she is so outgoing that she will never have trouble delivering an oral book report.
I bet she would have been good at that, performing.
Absolutely. John is always on the go, traveling hither and yon. Okay. Access meaning the company. Access recently celebrated its $1 billion mark in sales. So he's pretty happy. He and his crew were underway in the Port Huron to Mackinac Island yacht race in July, but had to pull out midway due to lack of wind. Can you believe that? But his real love is the new old-looking boat, Grand Season, which he spent months designing.
Oh, okay. Oh, designing a new boat that's like old-fashioned.
I think so. Okay, so continuing on. I spent most of my free time working in the school and doing volunteer work. Charlevoix, and I hope I'm saying that right. I'm so sorry. I think it's Charlevoix. The Charlevoix house was on the home tour in July and will likely appear in one of the Better Homes and Gardens publications in 1997. On a recent trip to New York City, my friend and I appeared among the throngs of fans on the Today Show. Al Roker and Bryant actually talked to us, and we were on camera for a few fleeting moments. We are all enjoying continued good health and look forward to seeing you in 1997. One final note. Thank you to all my friends and my dear husband for surprising me with the biggest, most outrageous 40th birthday bash I've ever had. We'll be spending my actual birthday on the Disney Big Red Boat over the new year. Merry Christmas and much love, the Ramseys.
Oh my God, they're going on a Disney cruise. I'm so jelly. I'm jealous of them in the past.
Nothing good ever happens on a cruise. One day we will cover some cruise crimes, but damn.
Really? Is there some cruise crimes?
Oh okay. My gosh, Paige, are there cruise crimes? I have them written down on our little list of topics. I have some cruise crimes, big ones. And one happens on a Disney cruise.
Ooh, all right. Maybe we don't have to go on a Disney cruise.
I don't think I'll ever go on a cruise.
Oh, they're fun though.
Did you know CrimeCon had a cruise? And I'm like, that's the worst idea ever.
That's just inviting trouble.
That's really. Okay. So on December 23rd, 2 days before Christmas, the Ramseys host a Christmas party in their home. They have approximately 30 people over, adults and children. They also hired a Santa Claus impersonator. His name is Bill McReynolds, and his wife actually came with him. He was recently reported to have some kind of bad health, I think heart issues maybe. So his wife came dressed as Mrs. Claus to kind of help.
Oh, that's sweet.
It's kind of cute. During the party around 6:45, someone within the house dialed 911 and hung up. When a police officer was dispatched to the house to check on them, one of the adults at the party answered the door and said everything's fine. It's thought that one of the adults, I'm not sure who, was trying to make an overseas, possibly long-distance call and somehow kind of like dialed 911 as a part of the phone number.
Were they drunk already?
You know what? Maybe. But I can see that because I've had to dial, like, when my mom and family lived in Ireland, like, there was a lot of numbers you had to press. And if you're, like, dialing from, now I'm not saying they were at a corporate location, they were at their home, but if you're, like, at a location, maybe you have to dial 9 to get out and then 1 1 0 blah, blah, like, it could have happened.
That's true. Could have been a butt dial, but they didn't have cell phones, I guess. Never mind. No butt dials.
No butt dials, Paige. not in 1996. So on December 24th, Christmas Eve, JonBenet went over to a friend's house to play. I think Patsy had a few like presents to kind of wrap. Plus, they were actually planning a trip the day after Christmas to go to Michigan to see John's older children, to have a few days with them and then go to the cruise. I forgot where it was coming out of. But anyways, so the mother of the friend that JonBenet was playing with overheard JonBenet saying how Santa said he would come visit after Christmas. The mother thought she was mistaken and said something along the lines of, Santa comes tonight, not after Christmas. And JonBenet said, no, Santa said he was going to pay me a special visit and see me after Christmas, and it's a secret.
Whoa, that's creepy.
And remember, there was a Santa impersonator at the party the day before.
Yeah, maybe he like took her to the side and whispered to her a little bit like, hey, I'll come see you.
Guess
Don't
what?
Tell gonna... anybody.
We're going to talk about him next week.
Oh, I will be talking about him next week, everybody.
Yes, you will. We'll talk about it together. Okay, Christmas morning finally arrives.
Yay, Christmas! Oh my god, everybody's so happy. We get some toys. There's like a big bicycle under the... I don't want a bicycle. Fuck bicycles. Give me some lipstick.
All right. So the family goes downstairs to open presents a little after 6 a.m. Everyone opens their presents. The big hit gift with Burke was a Nintendo 64, and oh my god, I want to get out my Nintendo 64 and play some freaking Pokemon Stadium, like, right now.
Oh my god, Pokemon Stadium is the best game. I fucking love that game.
I wish we could play together, because, like, I had it, but my sister never wanted to play with me, so I had to play against the computer, and the computer cheats.
The computer fucking cheats. I agree. I've never been able to play with another person.
It's so much fun when you play with another person. I got my husband to play with me. And he totally doesn't understand Pokemon at all. And so, like, it was way too easy to beat him, but whatever. Okay. So, JonBenet got a bike.
Page. Oh, sorry. I just never learned. I don't care about bikes.
That's fine. So, JonBenet got a bike, and she got a little bracelet making kit.
That sounds nice.
Yeah. Kids love that shit. So, in the book by John and Patsy Ramsey titled The Death of Innocence, they said that Patsy actually gotten a custom doll made for JonBenet that was made to look like her and even had similar outfits to those that JonBenet had.
Well, that's kind of nice, I guess. Real cute. Yeah.
I think it's cute. Like, I would have loved that. I was very into dolls. Okay, so Patsy was really expecting JonBenet to be, like, super excited about this, but she was not as interested in that as she was the bracelet-making kit.
So, that's funny. She's crafty.
I'm sure she spent a couple hundred, like, getting this custom made. I forgot what... I think it's called My Twin Doll. It's twin with double N at the end.
My Twin. Okay.
I looked it up because at first I thought it was like a My Size Barbie, but it's actually like a smaller doll, but still, like, having it custom made. But then again, there's only so many things you can do to a doll to make it look like your kid.
Right. It probably just had like...
Blonde hair.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or bleach blonde. You never know.
Platinum.
I don't think she was a platinum blonde. She was pretty... she had a good yellow. Anyway, so she... JonBenet was way more into, like, the bracelet-making kit, and that's cool. So after opening gifts, the family had breakfast. Then in preparation for a trip to Michigan, John Ramsey left home to go check on his private plane with the pilot to make sure it was ready for the flight they would be taking the next day. Remember, that one's the one going to Michigan to see his older children. Mm-hmm. He was out of the home for a few hours. At the house, a few neighborhood kids came over in the afternoon to play Nintendo with Burke, and JonBenet continued to make her little bracelets.
Cute. That's adorable.
Yeah, it makes me want to do one like that. Okay. That evening, the Ramseys went over to their friends, Priscilla and Fleet White's house, for dinner. After, they made a couple stops at friends' houses to drop off gifts. Around 9 p.m., they returned home, and JonBenet had fallen asleep in the car and had to be carried inside and put to bed.
Aw, you remember those days?
No, I don't.
I don't remember either.
My parents would wake my ass up and be like, hey, we're home. Get out. Get out of the car. Come on. I'm sure I was picked up a few times. Patsy said she had put some long john type of bottoms on her and then just kept the shirt she was in. She was asleep. I'm sure it's kind of hard to maneuver clothes on a kid, you know.
Oh, I'm sure.
Exactly. So after leaving JonBenet's room, Patsy went to get ready for bed while John and Burke were trying to assemble a toy, I think, downstairs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I think they said as soon as they got home, Burke was like, I really want to get this toy put together before we leave tomorrow. And John's like, okay, well, this is gonna... If I help you, that'll get done faster. We'll get you to bed.
That's nice of the dad, instead of just being like, get your ass to bed.
And I'm kind of surprised because John Ramsey's a little older at this point because he has kids in their, like, 20s. So now he has, like, these little younger kids. So maybe he's learned patience. I don't know.
I hope so at that point.
So somewhere around 10 p.m., John gets Burke to his room and tucked in and then finally makes it to bed. John, by his own admission, says he set his alarm clock for about 5:30.
Okay, that's very early, but they got to catch a flight.
They do. I think they said they actually wanted to land in Michigan by 11 a.m. So if they're flying from Boulder, Colorado? I can't say Boulder. Boulder, Colorado. The following morning, December 26th, Patsy and John woke up at 5:30 a.m. to start getting ready for the day. John goes to take a shower. Patsy puts on her clothes from the previous evening, puts on a little bit of makeup, and heads downstairs. As she's descending the back stairway, and heads up, there are two staircases. There's the main one, and then there's the back one, which is kind of a spiral staircase.
Rich people.
It actually didn't look that nice when I saw pictures of it.
Oh.
As she's going down, she notices some papers on the stairs. She picks them up and begins reading. She quickly realizes it's a ransom note and didn't finish reading it and ran back upstairs to check JonBenet's room. When she realized she wasn't in there, she checked Burke's room. Burke was asleep in the bed and JonBenet wasn't in there because Burke actually had, I think, two twin beds, and every once in a while JonBenet would go like sleep in the other bed. Maybe she had a nightmare and she just wanted to be close to her brother.
Yeah.
Patsy shouted for John, who came running. He started reading the note. Here's what the note said. Warning, it is 2.5 pages long.
Woo! All right.
So, we're going to read the note, and then we're going to break down the note.
Okay.
The note said, Mr. Ramsey, listen carefully. We are a group of individuals that represent a small foreign faction. We respect your business, but not the country it serves. At this time, we have your daughter in our possession. She is safe and unharmed, and if you want her to see 1997, you must follow our instructions to the letter. You will withdraw $118,000 from your account. $100,000 will be in $100 bills, and the remaining $18,000 will be in $20 bills. Make sure you bring an adequate size attaché to the bank. When you get home, you will put the money in a brown paper bag. I will call you between 8 and 10 a.m. tomorrow to instruct you on delivery. The delivery will be exhausting, so I advise you to be rested.
What?
We're going to break it down, Paige. Calm down.
Okay.
If we monitor you getting the money early, we might call you early to arrange an earlier delivery of the money and earlier pickup for your daughter. Any deviation from my instructions will result in the immediate execution of your daughter. You will also be denied her remains for a proper burial. The two gentlemen watching over your daughter do not particularly like you, so I advise you do not provoke them. Speaking to anyone about your situation, such as police or FBI, will result in your daughter being beheaded. If we catch you talking to a stray dog, she dies. If you alert bank authorities, she dies. If the money is in any way marked or tampered with, she dies. You can try to deceive us, but be warned, we are familiar with law enforcement countermeasures and tactics. You stand a 99% chance of killing your daughter if you try to outsmart us. Follow our instructions and you stand a 100% of getting her back. You and your family are under constant scrutiny, as well as the authorities. Don't try to grow a brain, John. You're not the only fat cat around, so don't think that killing will be difficult. Don't underestimate us, John. Use that good southern common sense of yours. It's up to you now, John. Victory. SBTC.
What?
What do you make of that, Paige?
WTF is what I say after SBTC.
SBTC. Find out what it means to me.
Yeah, what does it mean? Let's break that shit down, because I am confused and upset.
Yeah. So, what's odd about this, besides everything, it was written on Patsy's stationery with a pen belonging to the Ramseys. That has been confirmed.
Whoa, how could they? Do you know how they confirmed that it was their pen?
The pen ink, I believe, was matched from their drawer to the pad of paper. So that means also whoever wrote this must have written it in the house while everyone was sleeping.
Yeah, and then just left it like, this is your paper, but here you go.
Also, the author of this note had started a first draft, as indicated on the imprint on the stationery pad, and that note had started with Mr. and Mrs. Ramsey, not just Mr. Ramsey.
Weird. Why would they change it?
Exactly. The total requested dollar amount was $118,000. It's a lot of money.
Yes.
But that happened to be the amount John Ramsey was awarded from work by way of a bonus.
Interesting.
So he had gotten a bonus of $118,000. Not exact. I think it was $118,000 and like maybe 226. I don't know. There were some little dollars, I guess. I guess that's little dollars to somebody.
Little dollars.
Little dollars. You know, small change. Anyways, so who knew about that specific amount? That's a very specific amount.
It is a very specific amount. It's very strange, John.
Mm-hmm. Next, a couple of the words were misspelled in the letter business and possession.
They misspelled business. I know those. Okay, possession. There's like a bunch of S's in there. Who knows?
There's a lot of S's in business. But funny enough, the word attaché wasn't. And who uses a word, that word instead of briefcase? It's the same thing, essentially. Historically yes. speaking, and I went down a little mini rabbit hole here. Historically speaking, an attaché case would be used by someone in a more political position, whereas a briefcase would be used more by people in the legal field, like briefcase.
Oh, okay.
But attaché is a French-derived word and could go back to the, quote, small foreign faction that was mentioned.
Okay, so that's why they misspelled business but spelled attaché correctly. Okay.
Possibly. Well, we don't know. And logically, if you were writing a ransom note, wouldn't you, and I'm going to take you through a list, number one, keep the writing to a minimum. Isn't that why you always see, like, ransom notes, like, magazine cutout pieces, like, glued?
Yeah.
So they couldn't identify, like, handwriting, right?
Yeah.
And it usually just says, this much, this place, this time. Like, don't let me tell you all about my history and shit.
No, they don't go into why they're doing it. It's like all these mismatched letters from magazines, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. And it just says, they will die if you don't bring us this much money tomorrow or whatever.
Okay, so you wouldn't give any clues as to who you are or who you're working for, right?
Probably not.
Probably not. Why, if you were writing a ransom note, would you write it in the home of your victim while they're still asleep?
I don't think you would, because you might wake them up. Or what if they want to go get a glass of water? John is kind of older. He might have to pee a couple times in the night. He'll see you.
That's right. And would you, if you were a small foreign faction, wouldn't you leave out the part that you're small? Wouldn't you want to appear big to be taken more seriously?
Yeah, why would you say, we are like just a couple of people, we want some money, you know? I think you're right. I think it should just be very minimal amount of information.
Paige, there is fuckery afoot. Additionally, there are several loosely used movie lines in this note.
What? Really? I didn't catch it. I feel like a failure.
No, don't. There's not, I mean, I've seen one of these movies and I didn't even get the reference. But anyways, and there's actually more than I'm going to tell you, but these are the ones I thought actually like made more sense. There's a movie called Nick of Time. The quote is, you talk to a cop, you even look at a cop too long and your daughter's dead. I'll kill her myself. Cut the head off right in front of you.
Ugh.
So that kind of goes back to something in the message where it's like, you know, I'll behead your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Dirty Harry. You've heard of that movie. I think it has Clint Eastwood, if I'm not mistaken.
I have heard of it. True.
Okay. So the line in that one is, if you talk to anyone, I don't care if it's a Pekingese pissing against a lamppost, the girl dies.
And they said stray dog.
Mm-hmm, they did.
That stuck with me because I was like, what?
Okay. Right. It's kind of bizarre, right?
Yes.
Yeah. If we catch you talking to a stray dog, she dies. Okay. And lastly, the movie Speed with Keanu. Apparently there's a line in it, and this is the one I've seen. I totally didn't remember this. Do not attempt to grow a brain.
Oh, is that from Speed? Whoa.
Apparently. So the line in the letter says, don't try to grow a brain, John.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was kind of a strange thing.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's watched too many movies, I guess.
I guess whatever foreign country this faction is in, they get some movies.
Right, they had a Hollywood video back in the day.
Oh my god, a Hollywood video, Paige.
That's 1997. How old are we?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm drunk.
Absolutely. Sam used to work at Hollywood Video, so I hear about it every once in a while.
Yeah, I had an ex that worked at Hollywood Video.
No, you didn't. We don't have to remember him.
It's okay, I'm a better person for it. All right, once John has read the letter, he tells Patsy to call 911, despite the note saying, do not call these people, do not call 911.
I think you should. I don't know if people will actually kill the person they kidnapped, but I really think you probably should go to the cops. They're probably just saying that to scare you. But I don't know. I've never had anybody kidnapped. If I did, I'd be like, I will pay you in cat fur.
We got plenty of that, both of us.
Exactly.
So Patsy calls and speaks to the 911 operator, and I hope very much that I can insert some audio right here.
What's going on there, ma'am?
We have a kidnapping. Hurry, please.
Explain to me what's going on, okay?
There, we have there's a note left and our daughter's gone.
A note was left and your daughter is gone? How old is your daughter?
6 years old. She's gone. 6 years old.
How long ago was this?
I don't know. I just found the note. And my daughter's gone.
Does it say who took her?
What?
Does it say who took her?
No. I don't know. There's a ransom note here.
It's a ransom note?
It says FBTC. Victory. Please.
Okay, what's your name? Are you
Patsy Ramsey? I'm the mother. Oh my God! Please.
I'm sending an officer over, okay?
Please.
Do you know how long she's been gone?
No, I don't. Please, we just got out and she's right here. Oh my God, please.
Okay,
please, well, somebody.
I am, honey.
Please.
Take a deep breath,
please.
Me, okay?
Hurry.
Patsy?
Holy fucking shit.
So what did you make of the 911 call?
She is breathing very heavily. And I mean, I don't want to paint this with any other conceptions of what I've heard or anything. Honestly, she sounds like she's forcing it a little, because she's actually quite... At the beginning of the call, the first thing she does is give her address very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the call, she's like, like she's breathing into the phone as if she's like trying to get the operator to hear her breathing in a way that makes me think she's not actually breathing that heavy. That's what it sounds like to me. I don't want to dig too deep into that because I don't know and I wasn't there, but that's just what it sounds like. What do you think?
You know what? It's really hard to tell because, you know, you just don't know. A couple weird things I picked up was she says she's 6 years old. She's blonde. She's 6 years old.
Right. Yeah. Like that's the only. Yeah. That was very specific. Like very.
I don't recall her ever saying her name is JonBenet Ramsey.
Yeah, she doesn't. She just says she's blonde. She's six. She's blonde.
But besides that description of her age and her hair color, she's giving no other clues or any other information, not clues, but information.
Yeah, you'd think, I don't know. Me and you have never had to call, I don't think so anyway.
No.
We've never had to call a 911 and tell them about
somebody. Any sort of emergency. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then the only other little thing I picked up on was she says, I'm the mother, not I'm her mother. Although that can, you know, things come out of your mouth. We talk on this podcast all the time and shit comes out of my mouth wrong all the time.
That's true. That's a good point. She's under stress. She might have just said it wrong. I don't know.
Right. But I mean, people pick this apart so much. We might talk about more next week, but.
Well, even on the thing you sent me, at the end of it, it said something like, people believe the audio keeps going even after she stops talking.
Yes. And I think we'll talk about that more next week.
Because
there's some, I don't want to say conspiracy theories, but they're kind of conspiracy theories about further audio that might have happened after.
Ooh, on the same call?
Yes.
On the same recording? Oh, possibly. Okay.
Possibly. But we'll talk about that more. So Patsy hangs up with 911, then proceeds to call her friends, the Whites and the Fernies, to tell them what's going on and ask them to come over. So done with 911. I'm calling my friends to come over.
I don't know if that's what someone would do, but I that's not what I would do, I guess.
I don't think I would do that either, but I'm also not the kind of person that calls friends that often. When yeah. I have a crisis, I might talk to you. I might talk to my sister, but that's about it. I don't know.
Right. And you're not calling that. I know we're in a different time right now with COVID, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. But I don't usually call people to come over in a crisis. I'm like trying to handle it myself.
Right. Or maybe like you and Sam or like me and my husband, like we'll figure this out ourselves.
Yeah.
But then again, I'm not them. I don't know what their relationship was like with the Whites and the Fernies.
It's true. Some people are a little bit more extroverted, a little bit more like, hey, let's all get in on this. I can't do it by myself.
Yeah, absolutely. So they come over, and also the minister from their church and victims' advocates, along with more police, arrive. Now, Paige, do you know why this is a terrible thing to do in this situation?
No.
So, getting all these other people over is compromising a crime scene.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense now. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And while they don't know it's a murder yet, it's still important not to compromise the integrity of any clues, evidence, anything they could possibly find.
Right, and the cops are on their way.
I can't remember who shows up first. I'll have to try and find another timeline, but I want to say the police, like one police officer shows up, and then the Fernies and Whites show up, and then the police advocate or the victim advocates, I'll talk about them in a second, show up, and then more police detectives show up. But anyways, guess what? Now there's DNA and fingerprints from all sorts of people all over the house.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. They shouldn't have invited other people over after they called the cops.
True. Now, they're probably not thinking about it. But the thing is, even in a kidnapping situation, if she was truly kidnapped, you would still be compromising all kinds of evidence. And they actually only roped off her bedroom for people to stay out of. But I'm like, if a kidnapper had come in, they came in through an entrance of some sort, mm-hmm. traipsed through the house, mm-hmm. probably sat down to write a damn letter, which I feel like someone said was... when they tried to write the letter out themselves, they said it took like 10 minutes or something to just write out the letter. So if you don't have the letter planned, it could take like 20 to 30 minutes to write this letter out. Plus, they already did a first draft. So
right, exactly. So they sat down for a good amount of time. There might be some hair right there. There might be some fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the victim advocates who were there, they started trying to help, like, not only comfort the Ramseys, but also help, like, tidying up the kitchen, which was meaning to be helpful, but they were also cleaning the countertops and possibly getting rid of crucial evidence.
Hold up. What are these victim advocates anyway?
I'm going to talk about them right now. Oh, so okay. The victim advocates, I believe, technically work for the police department, and what they do is they're there to kind of just be of comfort to victims. So I think they actually showed up with like coffee and bagels to just kind of be there for the Ramseys to comfort them in this crisis. But I'm like, okay, if they technically work for the police department, even if they're volunteers, shouldn't they learn about, you know, don't touch shit during orientation or something, right?
Yes, you would think that the cops, even if the cops looked over and saw these volunteers cleaning up the kitchen, being like, hey, there's some mm-hmm. fingerprints that we wanted to take from there, and you just fucked exactly. it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would be like, don't, just sit down, don't touch anything. Like, that's it.
Yeah, talk to them, bring them outside, maybe. I don't know.
Anyway, the first police officer to show up, his name was Rick French. He read the ransom note, did a quick search of the house and basement, and only noted a broken window in the basement, but said that it was too small for anyone to enter through. When it was brought up to the Ramseys, John Ramsey admitted he had broken it a few months before and hadn't gotten around to fixing it.
Months? Jesus, okay.
During the summer, I believe. Also, Fleet White, one of John Ramsey's friends, looked around the basement and didn't find anything.
So they probably didn't come in through that window.
We don't know. But we'll get back to that. Actually, you know what? We're going to talk about right this damn minute. So,
right this damn fucking
right
minute.
Right this damn minute. So the reason John Ramsey broke the window, he did it on purpose. It wasn't like an accidental breaking. He broke the window because apparently... he had locked himself out of the house, and that was the only way into the house. And he's like, okay, well, that's how I'm going to get in. So it's not too small for someone to get through.
Right. I was just going to say.
He got through it.
Yeah. He had to get into the house somehow. If he broke that window to get in, it's big enough for somebody to get in through there.
Exactly. John begins organizing how to get the money from a bank through his friend and stockbroker. As mentioned in the note, the Ramseys were to be awaiting a call between 8 and 10 a.m., so the police set up a trace, I believe it's called, to surveil the incoming calls.
Okay.
While this is going on, around 7 a.m., Burke, who's been in bed this whole time, supposedly, is up and is suggested by Fleet White that they take Burke over to his house just so he'll be out of the way.
So he's just waking up. He has no idea what's going on.
He might have been awake before. In later interviews, he says he remembers his mom coming in the room, but he stayed in bed. He remembers a cop coming in and shining a flashlight around. He stayed in bed. And this is probably about like an hour and a half later.
Okay.
So he stayed in bed. 10 a.m. passes. No phone call from the kidnapper ever comes, but it's remarked later by several people that no one seemed to notice that the call didn't come, like John and Patsy. Like, they didn't really seem to, like, be hovering over the phone waiting. Like, 10 a.m. came and went, and no call was made. Like, come through.
Man, I don't know, because I've never had a kid kidnapped, but you would think you'd be watching that fucking phone and being like, okay, why aren't they calling it? It's 10:01.
So John and Patsy are just beside themselves with worry, and rightly so. Detective Linda Arndt, who was there, gave John and Fleet White an assignment, because John was just like pacing, stressed, and like, I get it. So she's like, look, why don't you go search the house top to bottom and check if anything's missing or out of place, and then let me know, because you would be the one to know.
Mm-hmm.
So John and Fleet start in the basement looking around. Now, being someone who's only been in a basement maybe two times ever, and they were the size of like two car garages, when looking at the Ramsey's basement, it seems more like Buffalo Bill's basement from Silence of the Lambs.
Oh my God.
Yeah, exactly. So if you can imagine that, that's kind of what it reminded me of. So based on a floor plan layout I found online, it looks like you reach the bottom of the stairs in the basement and there are four doors.
Okay.
One door leads to a small closet. Okay. The next door leads to a laundry room and a storage room through there. And the next door leads to a hobby room and a storage space. So that's three rooms so far. Or three doors. There's, like, you can walk into a room and then there'd be another door and you go through that and there's another room. So, the last door leads to the furnace, a freezer, and another door. And that door leads to the wine cellar.
Okay. Lots of room. Lots of things going on down there.
Yes. And I'll be sure to post a picture in our Instagram of what this looks like. Because I was like, huh? I had to look at pictures. So yeah. The men are checking this area. And as John goes into the wine cellar, he immediately cries out. He's found his daughter, JonBenet. And I want to read out a transcript from when John was interviewed by, I believe, Boulder PD a few months later in regards to finding her body. So John found her, okay?
Okay.
John Ramsey says, so I went back down with Fleet and we looked around for some glass again. Didn't see any glass. And I think they're referring to the glass that was broken from when he broke in.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, and I told him that I thought the break came from when I did it last summer. And then I went from there into the cellar. Pull on the door, it was latched. I reach up and unlatch it, and then I saw the white blanket. And that's the end of the quote there.
A white blanket.
He sees a white blanket. Now, Fleet White had checked that room already, but he said he couldn't find the light switch, and the room was dark. John doesn't say if he turned on the light or not, but he definitely made it sound like as soon as he opened the door, she was visible. So keep that in mind. That's a little weird.
It is a little weird.
So Fleet White runs upstairs and yells to call an ambulance. JonBenet is lying on the floor, and how I describe her is as John describes her, and you'll find out why we have to go with his description in just a second. Anyway, she's partially on the white blanket with some of it wrapped around her legs. Her hands are tied behind her head, and there are pieces of black tape on her legs, tape on her mouth, and her head is kind of cocked to one side. He said he touched her cheek and she was cold. He removed the tape off of her lips, and they were blue.
Oh, that's sad.
It is very sad. He began removing the binding from her hands. He then picks her up and takes her upstairs and lays her on the floor. So it's unfortunate that, number one, she's she's gone. It's unfortunate that he moves her because now any clues based on her positioning are gone.
Yes.
But it's kind of understandable because if I found my child in a cold basement, I'd want to hold them and not leave them there. However, it is detrimental to any evidence.
You're right. It totally makes sense that he would just like pick her up if that's mm-hmm. his kid and he, you know, is sad about it. Mm-hmm. But also, if he did something, if he placed her there in the first place, I don't know. Because we don't know what actually happened. Mm-hmm. He would be like, oh no, I didn't even think that I was ruining evidence.
And honestly, like, I don't know John and Patsy. Like, I never will.
No.
But mm-hmm. I don't think they're thinking in terms of evidence, clues, DNA, or anything like that. Because in 1997, like, true crime is not what it is today, and people are just not aware of things.
That's true. That's a really good point. He might not have been thinking very clearly. Obviously, he might not have been thinking very clearly. That's really all we can go with, because his daughter is dead at that point.
Mm-hmm. So Detective Linda Arndt checks JonBenet's vitals and says she's passed. The detective moves JonBenet over near the Christmas tree in the living room and placed her on the floor, where Patsy begins weeping over her body.
Damn harsh. Okay.
Not long after the body's discovered, John got on the phone with his pilot instructing him to ready the plane to go to Atlanta instead of Michigan. And police overheard this and told John they can't leave the city.
No, you are staying here, buddy.
Right. John said most of his family is in Atlanta and they want to be with family at a time like this, but the police reiterate they need to stay close.
Yeah.
I'm like, hello. and if it were me and my child had just been found, I wouldn't want to go anywhere. Like, even if it's just a body, I'd want to be close. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would be right there hounding the cops, like, okay, what happened? Figure it out.
And about that time, John's kids from his first marriage arrive at the house. They were told earlier that morning that JonBenet had been kidnapped, and they changed their flight plans to go to Colorado instead of Michigan.
So they're showing up now. Like, there's a whole party in this house.
Pretty much. So I don't believe they actually came inside the house at that point. So if I'm not mistaken, they arrive and it's right at the time they had just found out that JonBenet had been murdered. So can you imagine? And this is before cell phones. So they find out that, you know, JonBenet's been kidnapped. They get on an airplane, they go to the airport, they're riding all the way to their parents' house, and they, as soon as they get there, like, no, she's dead. Like, what the shit, right?
Yeah. Yeah, dead inside of the house where they found a ransom note. Did the people who wrote those fucking ransom notes just say, like, they're going to find the body eventually. We're not going to get this money. But, you know, I don't know what happened.
Yeah, it's very weird. Very weird. So since they can't go to Atlanta, they all go stay at the Fernie's house.
To get out. Yeah.
Yeah, just so they're not in the house, because that's now an entire crime scene, not just her room.
Yeah, exactly. The fucking basement, you know, is the crime scene. The room. Yeah, exactly. The whole house.
Okay, so it wasn't until... Okay, so they, I believe, left the house around, like, 1:30. It wasn't until approximately 8 p.m. that the pathologist, Dr. John Meyer, or Mayer, I don't know, Meyer, came to report and examine JonBenet's body. So hours have passed, and she literally has just been laying by the Christmas tree.
What? That doesn't even sound right.
So then, I mean, I guess in my head, I'm like, wouldn't you... That sounds cold, but I'm like, wouldn't you, like, pack her up and take her to the morgue or wherever
right
to
away.
Be. Yeah, but I guess they wanted to try and find clues before they moved her body. But I'm like, her body's been moved twice already. Once by John and once by the detective, which, shame on you, detective, for moving her body again.
Again, yes. Don't mess with evidence, Jesus Christ. But I agree with you. Just forensically speaking, they should have packed up that body and moved it as soon as he brought it up the fucking basement steps.
I think so, but that's just me.
Yeah.
So there was a ligature mark made around her neck using a segment of cord and a garrote fashioned out of a broken paintbrush handle from Patsy Ramsey's art kit, which was in the basement.
Weird. Very strange.
So Dr. Meyer also noted an abrasion or contusion below the right ear, as well as a dried abrasion on the lower left neck. There were also a few small dark circle marks on her neck. And we'll talk about that next week. But now that was just the preliminary examination. For the actual autopsy, once they actually take her to the office, medical office, wherever they do autopsies.
Mm-hmm.
morgue, I assume. Okay, so for the actual autopsy, here's what the recorded findings were. Okay, so one, skull fracture and subdural hemorrhage, which is bleeding in the brain, and bruises on the brain. Broken blood vessels in her eyes.
Damn.
Small ones, but they were still there. Abrasions on the side of her face. Inside her stomach were fragments of a yellow to light green tan, apparent vegetable or fruit material, which may represent pineapple. That's very important.
Pineapple, okay.
She had some vaginal injury.
What?
She had some vaginal injury, but no semen was found. It also appears her pubic area had been wiped with a cloth.
What?
I read somewhere, and that's just kind of the basics. I read somewhere that there might have been sexual trauma, but not in the, I hate to say it, like traditional sense. Okay. They don't think she was penetrated by a penis.
Maybe like a foreign object or a...
Yes, that's what they're thinking, possibly. So the official reported cause of death is this. Asphyxia by strangulation associated with craniocerebral trauma, which means that she suffocated due to the cord tied around her neck and was hit very hard in the head before or immediately after she died. It's thought that whatever hit her in the head did great damage, but ultimately it was the strangulation that killed her.
All right, somebody hit her over the head and strangled her.
Yes. So, next week, we're going to explore suspects, evidence, and theories with Paige.
That's right.
Yikes, that was tough. And guys, I got to say, when we picked this topic, I was like, there's a plethora, a cornucopia of evidence. But you know what the hard thing about this is? Not evidence, of like, you know, stories and things I can read. But the thing is, it's really hard to tell what's just someone's opinion and what's fact and someone's theory, and I really tried so hard, so please don't at me if I said something wrong. I'm trying so hard to make sure anything that I gathered was legit, not just random this and that, you know, because I mean, if I went with that, we could make this even more of a crazier story. But
oh, I'm sure we could have gone for another 3 hours of just like what people have said about it and all the things that might have happened.
Good God, yes. But yeah, next week we'll talk about theories. Some may be more far-fetched than others, but we'll talk about them then. So that is our episode for today. That is part one of our JonBenet Ramsey case. Thank you for listening. If you hung in there, thank you so much. Be sure to check us out on Instagram at Near Death Dolls Podcast, where I will be posting pictures. You can also tweet us on Twitter at Near Death Dolls, where Paige will be posting pictures, I have no doubt.
Oh yeah.
You can send us an email at neardeathdolls.com. Please don't hate me if I said something wrong. But if you also want to mail us your spooky, creepy, weird personal experience you want to share with us, please do, because we have another Dear Dollies coming up soon and we need a few more stories. Please. And be sure to let us know if we can use your name or not. And if you have a social media handle you want us to shout out, we will do that. Right, Paige?
Hell yeah. Any day of the week.
Any day.
And if you like what you heard, let us know by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also help us by taking a screenshot while you're listening to our episode and share on Instagram or Twitter. It's a simple, fast, and free way to support us. We like free.
Oh, God. Yes, we do.
Free is fun.
Free is fabulous.
You fabulous girl.
You're fabulous, bitch.
Bitch. And if you feel like joining in on the fun, come on over to the Dark Dolly side and join our Patreon for some delicious extras.
Oh my gosh. If you heard the extras that we added to our latest Dolls After Dark,
you would blush.
You would need a fan for the vipers.
The vipers, honey.
Because we definitely made it not safe for work with links. So,
yes, if you guys want to see this, what we're talking about, it's dirty, it's funny, it's Christmas themed. What?
What? You're so funny.
Please come over to Patreon for Near Death Dolls Podcast. And you know what, dearest doll faces? I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. That was a while ago. And Christmas is coming up. So happy holidays to you. Be kind to each other. Until next time, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Be good for Santa Claus.
He won't give you presents. He'll give you coal.
Or Krampus or Belschnickel.
Yeah. Or the Yule Cat.
The Yule Cat. Yes.
It's going to eat you if you don't have a nice jacket on.
Put a nice jacket on. Get fancy with it.
It's cold anyway. Put on a fucking jacket, guys. You're going to get sick. It's not a time for getting sick.
Drink a hot toddy. You'll feel good.
Ooh, I want to drink one of those. Maybe next time.
A special thanks to Sam Hears for our art and music.
If you'd like to see more from him, check out the links in our show notes.